two of our worst enemies when it comes to everyday life, especially into our relationship with God, is the calendar and the clock. Not in terms of they themselves have become our enemies, but in terms of in the event of us trying to fit more and more into our lives and into our days to try and do more, it almost seems like the calendar and the clock have become our enemies. Like we're always working against the clock to meet a deadline, to get something done on time, or a day that's coming and all of a sudden the day comes and we're not prepared for it. And we have no one to blame but ourselves because we struggle with patience. We struggle with patience. The calendar and the clock has sadly become one of our worst enemies. I was recently finished up one of my textbooks for school that I'll be going to here in a few weeks. It was a great book of a 300-pager written by a lady who was very intelligent, is very intelligent. I give her credit for the information in the book. As I read through it, though, I started to become very anxious because she lost me at about page 125 as I was trying to finish this book for school because I have to write a paper on it. And I struggled throughout the rest of the book to understand her line of thinking and to understand her writing style so that I could understand all the concepts she was trying to teach in this textbook. The name of the textbook, by the way, was Cultivating Wholeness. Cultivating Wholeness. It's all about cultivating wholeness in a community and in a community of faith. And I was eager to get to the last chapter that dealt with the care of the pastor whom she calls all throughout her book, the gardener. And I was anxious to get to that last chapter about the care of the gardener because through the book, the gardener's caring for the plants or the people, you see. And this last chapter dealt with stress, it dealt with burnout, it dealt with the issues of pastoral ministry. And I couldn't wait to get there, which caused me, incidentally, all through the book to kind of hurry through it and not absorb what was in it and benefit from it. I did finish the book, praise God, and cannot wait for the class, but this is often the case in our struggle against time that we hurry through things and we don't learn what we're supposed to learn and we don't understand what's going on all around us, that God is working in our lives to strengthen our faith and to further us in our walk with the Lord. If we'd have had it our way, the heavens and the earth would have been created in one day or maybe even in an hour. If we had had it our way, the great flood would have maybe lasted a week. In fact, we'd have created the universe in one day, mankind on day two, the great flood on day three, the exile and the return on day four, Jesus' birth on day five, his crucifixion, death, and resurrection on day six, all so that we could get on with our lives on day seven, because we certainly wouldn't have rested on the seventh day, would we? You see, that's become our culture. And sadly, that's become our relationship with God oftentimes, and it is many times when we sit down and read the stories in the Bible. You see, the Bible is God's word, and it's God's history, the history of how he works with his people, and it shows us the character of God, that he does not work like we do, that his plan is always the best, that we're not in control. It also shows us that if we are willing to wait on God, he will always save his people. As I was reading through the rest of 1 Samuel, and you probably are saying, why is he going clear to the end of the chapter when we left off at chapter 19 last week? Why now all of a sudden are we going clear to the end? And I'll be honest with you, I'm a little bored with it because I'm not taking my time and digesting what God has there. I often wonder why God takes his time working out his plans. Why can't he just come to the conclusion so that I can go on? He can do anything. He can do it quickly if he chooses, but he's God and I'm not, so I have to be patient with God because I don't really learn from or learn to appreciate God's greatness from the end result. It's not the end that matters. It's the journey that grows us and strengthens us and builds us up in character and in faith. I had someone that said to me a few years ago that they just wanted to get through their schooling as quickly as they could. And I said, why do you want to do that? Well, I just want to get through all the hoops. I want to jump all the hoops and get it behind me. And I said, then there's no sense in going. There's no sense in doing it because you're not going to learn anything. It's wasted time. I have a good friend who tells me when he buys a book or starts to read a new book, he always reads the last chapter first. And he told me it's because it helps him understand the storyline as it goes along in the book, knowing the end result. I'm not like that. I don't like doing that. Some of you don't. Maybe some of you do. But you see, all through life, God's working in our lives. And sometimes we become so focused on, God, I want this problem solved now. I want it solved this way. I can't wait, God. I need it right now. And God says, well, that's just not how I work. Because I'm working all things for good for those who love me. I'm working all things, people, places, times, all the elements around us for your good. One doesn't appreciate the roses ever unless they stop to smell them. Let's see. I asked the question this week, if God ultimately wanted David as king, why didn't he raise him up in the forefront of the society of Israel? And why didn't he make the way smooth for David to be on the throne? Why did this have to be so hard? Why does life have to be so hard? And I wrestled with this, reading through it all this week. And the one answer, only answer I could come up with, was that God was revealing his character to his people as he always does. And he was teaching them to stay focused on God and trust him no matter how things seemed. The races that I remember the best in my past were the hardest ones, that I struggled the most, that my bike was broken, but yet I finished and sometimes won. The races that I would literally fall off of the bike at the end, I was so exhausted and could not even get a drink myself because I was so tired, but yet still won the race. Those are the ones that I remember, not the easy ones where it was a sunny day and there was no dust and there was no clouds in the sky and it was a beautiful blue day and the track really wasn't that hard and it was nice and cool. I don't remember those. You see, and that's the way it is with life as we go through life. We're reminded of Samuel's words to Israel earlier in chapter 12 as we come to the end. Talking about this king that the people wanted. They wanted a king and they wanted it now. They needed this. God, we know what's best for us. Give us this king, God. And Samuel said to them, all right, the Lord's going to give you a king. But if you fear the Lord and serve him and obey him and do not rebel against his commands, and if both you and the king who reigns over you follow the Lord your God, good. But if you do not obey the Lord and if you rebel against his commands, his hand will be against you as it was against your fathers. That sets the stage for all that happened afterwards till the end of this chapter where we're at today. See, the people wanted a king. We don't read a lot here in this book of 1 Samuel about interaction with God, talking with God, with Samuel and God, Saul and God, or David and God. We're seeing a historical perspective of what was going on in Israel at the time and the characters involved and what was taking place. We don't know much about Saul's spiritual life with God. It doesn't appear that he was very close to his God or there would have been interaction here. Saul would have cried out to God, and God would have spoken to him. But we don't see that here. we see what happened is that there was this man by the name of Saul who would have appeared to have been a great king. They made him king. God did bless him, and he was conquering the Philistines as long as he had God's blessing. But when Saul started to turn from God, everything in his life changed. Everything in Israel changed. The Philistines started coming back in power and conquering Israel and killing many, many Israelites. And there wasn't any peace. They were always afraid of the Philistines. Got any Philistines in your life? They keep coming at you. They're just an endless supply of them. They're like flies. You know, one day it's one thing, the next day it's another thing, another day another thing, and you're saying, God, I can't take any more of this. I need this problem solved, and I need it solved now. And then oftentimes when God doesn't do it right now, we get upset with God, and we feel like God's abandoned us, but that's not the case. In the story, we read how David stays faithful to God, and Saul doesn't. Saul turns from God. And things start to go downhill for Saul and the nation. And these chapters in between show us that God keeps his word. You see, that God keeps his word. In all of this struggle, and we're saying, why didn't God make it easy for David? God put Jonathan, the king's son, in David's life. Michal, the king's daughter, married David. David was related to the king. And all of a sudden, we see God starting to put people in David's lives to save David, because at this point, after he marries Michal, Saul's daughter, she learns of a plot to kill David. You see, at first, Saul tried to kill David himself. Then he said, I'll send him out to the Philistines. They'll kill him. Which did not happen because God was on David's side. And thirdly, there was a plot that the king said to his men, kill David at nighttime. Michal found out about it. She warned him and she told him to flee. David was God's man, you see. And no matter what was going to happen, God was not going to let him be destroyed. All right? And we read all these chapters in between that show us David's struggles. David ran from the king and from his own family who were trying to kill him. Now, we would have said, well, why didn't David just turn to God and say to God, God, destroy him, and God would have destroyed them. But David ran, you see. He ran from the problems. And as he was out in the wilderness and out in the desert, he wrote some of the most awesome psalms that we read today and cling to in our times of trouble. In his struggle, he started to meet people who God had put out in the outer skirts in the desert and in the wilderness, where we would have thought it was dry and there's nothing there. Why is he going to the caves? Why is he going there? Because God had people there waiting, not knowing that David was coming. God's plan was swirling, and it was working. When David got there, there were men sided with David and became his army. Do you know that God even put David in amongst the Philistine camps to protect him while he was running? So that he was protected? That seems so weird to me. The very enemy was David's security for a time. And I hope that you folks will go home and at some time read between chapter 19 and chapter 31, about David's struggles. Every place he went, to the priests in this town, to the people in this town, to the people in this town, God was protecting him in the place and in the people that God had prepared to save David, his man. I want you to think about that for a second. Where's God put me? Who has God put in my life to save me, to protect me from the enemy? Rather than just running around like chickens with our heads cut off. God, you got to do this now, God. You got to do this now. I can't stand it. God says, I'm working. I've already got it planned out. We just have to relax and be patient with me. See. We see the Lord was with David and against Saul. We see Saul had turned to his own ways. We see David was very successful in everything he did. Saul was jealous. Saul tried to kill David. The Lord protected David. Saul sent David into battle, hoping the Philistines would kill him. The Lord gave David the victory. The worse things got, the greater was the Lord's salvation for David. I want you to think about that. The worse things got for him, the greater was his salvation. And to add insult to injury, David became good friends with Saul's son, Jonathan, and married Saul's daughter. And the Lord was with them in all of this as the Lord's protection became more secure. God was literally putting a hedge around David with these people, some that David had never met before. And where did he meet them? Out in the wilderness, in the desert. Chapters 19 through 30 give us insight into God's protection of David as he flees into the surrounding wilderness and desert. Through people whom God put in his path and the places that God leads him to, David is on a journey. He's on a journey to ultimate victory over his enemies. And we have to understand this and grasp this morning, that our everyday lives, our struggles, and our pain and our suffering is the journey to ultimate victory over our enemy who's trying to destroy us and embarrass God. God's not going to let that happen. And finally, in our text today, we read of the final judgment of Saul and his sons. We read that the Philistines fought against Israel again. Here they were. You know what I struggled with as I read this, I thought to myself, how dumb can Saul be? When David fought against the Philistines, he won. He defeated him. So Saul wants to get David out of the picture. You would have thought that Saul would have stepped back and said to David, here, for the good of our people and for the good of my own life, here, David. Instead of the Philistines running, it was the Israelites running. You see, the Philistines came and the Israelites fled. Many fell slain on Mount Gilboa. Saul was wounded critically by the archers of the Philistines. Things were really bad for Saul that day. On the battlefield, his sons were dead, his fighting men were dead, and there he was, wounded in battle. Things were really in bad shape for this guy. And what did he do? He committed suicide. Rather than crying out to God. You see? He killed himself. He ran himself through. Furthermore, what happened? When the Israelites along the valley and across the Jordan River saw the Israelite army had fled and Saul and his sons were dead, they abandoned their towns and the Philistines came and occupied. The Philistines came in and routed their towns and took everything. Wow. Things were bad. There was no hope left. Or so it seemed. What can we learn from 1 Samuel? We can learn that disobedience to the Lord is not something that he takes lightly and is always penalized. Disobedience to the Lord is not something he takes lightly, and it's always penalized. If God did not penalize us for our disobedience, he would not be a just God. So if you're feeling like you're being penalized for something, that's okay, but go to the Lord. And say to him, Lord, if I've done something wrong, if I've disobeyed you and done something wrong that doesn't please you, show me so that I can repent, forgive me of my sins, cleanse me, and renew a right spirit in me. Oh my gosh, that's the Psalms, isn't it? When David committed adultery with Bathsheba. You see what I'm saying here? Disobedience to the Lord is not something he takes lightly, and it's always penalized. And know that will not last for all eternity. Secondly, the Lord has a plan for his people, and working against the Lord's plan leads to defeat. Have you ever felt like the more you try and do, the worse things get? Maybe it could possibly be that we're working against the Lord's plan in that case. Thirdly, when trials come, our power and our protection is in the Lord and in him only. Fourth, amidst the trials of life, we need to stop and look for the blessings. Stop and smell the roses. Stop for a moment and say, maybe this person that I don't care about, that's agitating me, is put in my life to bless me by God for some reason. You see, maybe the place I am right now is supposed to be a place of blessing that God has put me in to bless me and protect me. Amidst the trials of life, we need to stop and look for the blessings. And lastly, we need to be patient with the Lord as he works all things for good for those who love him and are called according to his purpose, his people, his children, whom we become through Jesus Christ. Be patient with the Lord as he works all things for good. This is what we see here, in that in the end, ultimately Saul was defeated. Evil was defeated. Evil defeats itself, actually. People will say, why did God allow Satan in the Garden of Eden if Satan was going to create all this mess? Because God knows that evil ultimately defeats itself and is defeated and never wins. And we need to remember that too amidst the trials and the everyday struggles and the pain and the suffering that we're in and the defeat that we're feeling, the depression that we're feeling, the jealousy that we're feeling, the anger that we're feeling. We need to stop for a moment and ponder. To just allow God to help us to see and help us to hear and help us to know, you know, be still and know that I'm the Lord, that I'm God. Because when we're patient with the Lord, he's going to take care of every problem sooner or later. Because that's what the Bible teaches us. This whole thing, I want you to think about this morning. If you get nothing else from this morning, I want you to think about this. This whole thing took approximately 15 to 20 years since the time David was anointed by Samuel as a shepherd boy. When David was anointed as a shepherd boy to become Israel's next king, it was 15 to 20 years until Saul committed suicide and took his own life. 15 to 20 years it took to get rid of the ultimate enemy in David's life. 15 to 20 years. And we get bored with a couple chapters of a book. We get tired after praying for a week or two, or maybe a year. There were many battles with the Philistines, and they were still going to come. The story changes here. That's why there's 2 Samuel. There were many battles with the Philistines and within the earthly kingdom. But we find that all that works to destroy God's people, all that works to destroy God's people will ultimately be destroyed itself, and the Lord will have his way. The Lord will have his way. We just have to be patient with God.